Quick disclaimer, the views and opinions expressed in this podcast are provided for informational purposes only and should not be construed as an offer to buy or sell any securities or to make or consider any investment or course of action. For more information, go to bestevershow.com.
If you're looking at an IRR, there's not going to be a cash flow in a lot of the better IRR deals just because of how they're structured on the back end. And if you're going to put a substantial amount in and going to need something as a more income-like approach, IRR is probably not the best metric to look at as well.
Welcome to the Best Ever Show, the world's longest-running daily commercial real estate podcast. Our hosts interview commercial real estate experts every day to get you the best advice ever with none of the fluffy stuff.
Best Ever listeners, welcome to the Best Real Estate Investing Advice Ever Show. I'm Slocum Reed, and today we are joined by Mark and Preston Pertell. Mark and Preston are based in Chicago, Illinois. The company is CTC Capital Management. Mark is the head of real estate acquisitions and development, and Preston is one of their analysts. CTC Capital Management partners with value-add multifamily operators to invest almost all of the general partnership equity in their deals. Their portfolio currently consists of 4,500 units across 26 properties, and they have had 13 successful exits. Mark, Preston, can you tell us a little bit more about your background and what you're currently focused on?
Sure, Slocum. Thanks for having us on. I just want to get this out of the way that we are currently not taking on new investors. Any views expressed by myself or Preston Hartzells are ours personally, not those of CTC. As far as what we're taking on now, our current business model is working with multifamily operators who are looking to grow their business. And the way we work with them is we invest co-GP capital alongside that operator in a value-add multifamily deal throughout the United States.
You've got 26 properties. You said you invest across the United States. What markets are you in currently?
We're throughout a lot of the Sun Belt, but then we also are in the Northeast, Midwest, and we'll look at any market except for California.
Gotcha. So you're looking at a very wide variety of markets then. I guess that makes sense given that your focus is partnering with operators. It's more important that the operator be the expert in that market, isn't it?
Correct. We really rely on the day-to-day of the operator, having their property management, their general contractors within a local area. We feel if the operator is in New York and looking at deals in California, he's just not looking hard enough in New York or the tri-state area because there are thousands of apartment buildings around there and we do not feel it's necessary for them to go across the country rather than work in their own backyard.
So I've been a host on this podcast for a couple of years now, right around or just over 300 episodes. And this is the first time I'm interviewing someone who introduces their value proposition as bringing co-GP equity. So I've got a couple of questions there, but first, I know that in a lot of syndications, I have friends even who syndicate but don't contribute any capital to their own deals. They let the LPs invest all of the capital, and there are many pros and cons to that approach, but there are definitely pros as well as cons on a micro level, depending on the general partner and their current financial position. Tell us more about this partnership structure. Why is it that you all are looking to bring general partner capital to deals?
Typically, as operators start to grow their business, they're confined by one of two, or if not both things, being capital and balance sheet. So you need a larger balance sheet to sign on the note, and then you also need capital to do multiple deals. As an operator, we find that most operators tend to want to do a lot of deals, but when they start doing larger deals, a single check writer is going to require a 10 or 20% equity investment from that operator. So our business model is essentially partnering with those operators and investing a majority of that GP capital. So now the operator and us can go together as the GP to the larger LP and present ourselves as the GP, and CTC Capital Management will sign on non-recourse debt, once again, further enhancing the operator's credibility to take down a larger deal. A lot of these larger deals, where an equity check might be $20, $30, $40 million, could require up to $2 million or more of GP capital. So by partnering with a group like ourselves, that operator can then scale their business and focus on running properties and executing the business plan rather than figuring out where their capital is coming from for their next deal at the GP level.
Based on your bio, I have you all in a total of 39 deals, 13 that have gone full cycle, 26 still in the portfolio. Out of those 39, the deals that you're already in, how many of them have been structured this way?
The more recent deals are structured as co-GP. Some of the earlier deals were co-GP, but then also some of them were just strictly LP. As we've expanded our offerings and our network, we've found that this co-GP model is very well received in the market. So we continue to work with this tool every time we look at a real estate deal.
So more of the recent deals, how many of those recent deals?
I would say at least probably 80%, 90% of them.
Sorry, 90% of how many?
About 80% of five in the current fund.
So four times?
Yes, in the current fund.
Gotcha. One of my favorite topics on this podcast, Mark and Preston, is how partners are creating alignment of interest with one another so that everyone succeeds together, and especially the decisions made around minimizing risk for limited partners while also making upside potential available to limited partners if everything goes well or better than projected. Along those lines, I can see what you're saying, that there are a lot of multifamily value-add operators who have the opportunity to scale their portfolios faster than they can scale their balance sheets and their liquidity. I can see where there's a lot of value to be added there for a quality operator who's in a position to scale well and quickly. With the four deals that you've done this way thus far, how have you structured that co-GP with those operators?
So at the co-GP level, we typically look for a way to incentivize the operator to perform at the highest level. So we do look for a piece of the promote. And then at the same time, too, we realize a lot of these operators are dependent on fee income to keep the lights on at their own business, which allows them the ability to go out and source new deals. So usually our deal is structured more towards a promote share towards us while letting the operator retain a majority of the fee income.
We've seen some very drastic shifts in the market across the country. We're recording at the beginning of Q2 2024, and just in the last year and a half, we don't need to summarize everything that's happened in commercial multifamily in the last year and a half, but how many of your deals have been acquired in the last 18 months?
In this current fund that closed in November of 2022, we've closed on three deals, and we have another two that we are at the joint venture agreement level at, so call it five in this current fund.
Okay. So those are fairly relevant to the market of the moment. Those are all value add multifamily deals, correct?
Oh yeah. Out of the three we've closed on, yes. And then out of the two that were in the final stages of, one of those is actually a development under the Live Local Act in Florida.
Gotcha. Okay, cool. So let me give a little background on myself. For our listeners who are less familiar, and for you all in case you're not as familiar, I am an apartment owner operator based out of Cincinnati, Ohio. Not doing deals yet of the size that you all are talking about. Possibility that I scale to that here relatively soon. I'm the general contractor. I'm the property manager. Almost everyone who touches the properties either reports to me directly, or there's one mid-level manager between us who reports to me. So I'm putting myself in the shoes of the operators that you have partnered with recently, thinking about myself, my interest to scale, and what my partnership or my prospective partnership would look like with you all, and wondering how those have been structured, and also wondering for our listeners who are looking to transition into general partnerships. They've been LPs in the past and they have capital and balance sheets that they can contribute to general partnerships, where the benefit is for them in structuring things the way that you do, instead of going with like a fund of funds model or just continuing to place capital in a more limited partner manner. So operators needing their fees, the acquisition fee, asset management fee, the things that, to use your words, keep the lights on, that makes a lot of sense. I guess I have two questions here. What kind of a promote split are you seeing between GPs and LPs right now, generally speaking? And then in that GP promote, how have you guys split it in your last four deals?
The promote share between GP and LPs, it varies deal by deal and situation by situation. So it's really hard to give a concrete number as to say, here's what the terms are. Obviously, it depends on a lot of the functions, the LP bench of that operator. Because although we bring in the GP capital, we don't have the network or depth to source LP capital at this time. So we rely on that operator to source that LP capital themselves or use some type of equity broker to bring in that LP capital. So to answer your first question, the split between the GP and the LP, it does vary deal by deal. I would say generally, though, the more of an institutional type partner you get on the LP side, the more sophisticated the terms are. So the operator generally has a choice of getting a single check writer with more investor-friendly terms versus going with more of a retail type raise, where you're going to have lots of smaller retail type investors, but you're going to get more friendly operator terms. So there's always a balancing act there and just striking the right balance there. As far as the split between the GP, the operator, and ourselves at the co-GP level, once again, it varies deal by deal, but generally we are looking for participation of the promote, not a majority of the promote, but participation of the promote to essentially make it worth everybody's while to take on the additional risk as a co-GP, while at the same time too compensating and incentivizing the operator to perform.
Gotcha. I may be asking these questions wrong, Mark, but I'm asking you to give us the numbers. So let me try a different way to ask this. You guys have done almost 50 deals now, with five of them being in the last 18 months, which means 45 of them were not in the last 18 months. You guys have been in this industry or in value add multifamily for quite a while. So can you talk to us about thinking about alignment of interest with regards to the returns that are deliverable, but also the returns that are being asked for, required by LPs, and how much of a pref and how much of a promote there have been in the deals that you've seen in the last 18 months by comparison to prior to that? So are you seeing generally that the promote is leaning further towards the LPs than it was pre-2022, the way most people would say?
I would say the terms between the pref and the hurdles and the splits at those hurdles is relatively the same. It probably leans a little bit more towards the LP in today's market compared to previously. The biggest challenge, though, right now is just finding equity that's willing to invest in a deal compared to a couple of years ago. Obviously, with interest rates going up, the loan to cost on a project has also decreased, which an operator a couple of years ago could have got away with 70-80% loan to cost. Now they're looking at 55-70% loan to cost, and 70 is being aggressive. So not only are interest rates higher and you need to raise twice as much equity to get the same deal done, a lot of equity just has their hands in their pockets as it's kind of wait and see mode. So it's not so much the terms so much as just finding a willing equity investor in a lot of these deals right now.
So even though more capital is needed and capital is more difficult to raise, you're not seeing the terms change?
Once again, deal by deal, but for the most part, similar to what we've seen in the past. Now, Preston, you want to weigh in here?
Yeah, if they were 8% pref with 70-30 up to a 15 and then 60-40 after a 20% IRR, back pre-interest rate hikes, pre-COVID, today it would be 7 pref and 75-25 up to a 15 and then 70-30 after a 20. I mean, it's pretty insignificant. And then on our GP side, it's still pretty much minimum of 25% promote we want to participate in per deal. Nothing's changed on that GP side as well.
So CTC, thinking about these co-GP relationships that you have with scaling operators, you're looking at letting the operators keep the fees and then taking a minimum of 25% of the promote, assuming that there is a promote upon sale.
It's correct. We're looking at these deals as more of a longer term payout in the back end. Our funds are IRR driven, so we're looking for a total return aspect. So we're willing to forego the income in return for a larger payout in the back end.
We'll get back to the show with first some sponsors I'm confident you'll find value in learning more about. If you're an investor like me, you're probably looking for one platform to manage the banking and finance needs of your entire portfolio. The good news is, there is one. It's called Baselane, and it's the number one banking platform built for independent real estate investors that reduces busy work so you can focus on growing your business. With Baselane, you can earn up to a 4.19% annual percentage yield and 5% cash back on debit card spending with no monthly fees. With a simplified view of your cash flow and expenses, you can retire those tedious spreadsheets. You can also manage unlimited virtual accounts and cards, and even open separate accounts for each property or unit. Join more than 40,000 real estate investors who trust Baselane for their banking, property management, and bookkeeping. Head over to baselane.com/Joe and sign up today for a chance to win a $500 Amazon gift card. That's baselane.com/Joe.
A couple of questions here. I am in a deal we closed on 6 weeks ago. It's structured in such a way that it's a value add multifamily, significantly smaller than the stuff that you're talking about, but it's here in Cincinnati, almost literally, but definitely figuratively in my backyard. And based on the play on this property, I just don't think we need to own it that long to reap the vast majority of the forced appreciation benefits. And so we've structured our deal in a manner that we are all incentivized to sell early if possible. Sell in year two, as opposed to waiting until that typical 5-year hold period. But our debt and other things are structured such that if we need to stay in this thing for 5, 7, even 9 years, we're going to be fine. Given that your returns in these deals are exclusively or almost exclusively promote driven, do you feel incentive to have your deals sell faster than your targeted hold period, if possible?
I wouldn't say so much that we're promote-driven and more as IRR-driven, and that IRR is a function of both the property performing well and the promote share. At the end of the day, the promote doesn't kick in until the first hurdle's hit. So we're not in the business of just investing in deals that we think are going to be okay. We still want a strong real estate deal, because if that deal performs well, then we perform well as that promote share is realized. To your question on hold times, being IRR driven, yes, a shorter hold time is generally going to realize a much larger IRR than a longer hold time. Our current investment vehicle, the hold times we advertise are 1 to 10 years. So we're somewhat indifferent in terms of hold time on an individual deal, but from a fund level, we look to vary our hold times just from a diversification standpoint.
And just in terms of total promoted dollars, if you hold something for 1 year and the IRR is 30 and the equity multiple is 1.2, there's only so many promoted dollars we can take, no matter what our promote split is.
That makes a lot of sense. That's a much more sophisticated answer than my question was ready for. It wasn't a very sophisticated question, and you gave a very sophisticated answer. That's a better way to put it. Asking on behalf of our listeners who are more prone to put themselves in your shoes than in mine as a potential operator partner, why is it that doing this sort of co-GP investing for CTC is more advantageous for you all than simply being a key principal or investing in more of a fund of funds manager or being one of those LPs who's capable of demanding higher returns or being able to stroke a larger check?
We really approach it as the co-GP as a tool that we can use and like to use in the same way that an operator might look at a deal and say, hey, we can add another 30 units onto a property, or we can improve the management of the company and add value. We're using the co-GP model as a value add for our fund investors within the fund context. So it's really a way to both service the operator and have them allow to do bigger deals, but at the same time to benefit our own investor base. So it really is kind of a win-win situation at the business level.
You know, depending on the deal, of course, a mid to high teens IRR is a fairly solid target for limited partners right now. Given that investors in your fund are effectively engaging in the general partnership, what kind of an IRR are you looking at for yourselves and for investors? Again, not making an investment opportunity available. CTC is not raising capital currently. But for the investors who are in your fund currently, what are those IRRs projected to look like?
Our offerings are blind pool offerings. So although we target an IRR, we really try to be very clear that as we find opportunities and deals, that will realize an IRR. So our funds, as they evolve in hold times, it's the IRR that we talk with our investors. We try to remain very conservative because being a blind pool offering, there's a lot of risks that will unfold over the next several years that we're looking to capture the best opportunities. But at the same time, too, we try to remain very conservative in discussing investor returns. To answer your question, as far as what we're looking for, as you mentioned, a mid-teen IRR, that's what we'll start looking at from a project level to start our underwriting. Anything less than that, we tend to look at as more of a buy and hold type IRR. We're looking for more value add type opportunities.
So what are the projected returns for CTC that get you excited to engage in a deal?
On a project, our minimum is 5 years, 50% IRR. If the hold times more or less, the IRR will shift. But the way the math works for the promote, just like in the example Mark used earlier, we'll provide up to 9.5% of the total equity. If we were to get 9.5% of the promote, that would be project level returns. So if equity percentage out of the total equals promote, that'll just be project level returns. If we're putting in 9.5% equity and we get 25% promote, we will exceed project level if that project outdoes a pref or first hurdle.
I want to make sure that at least I understand you all clearly, and then hopefully the listeners are able to follow along. I bet a lot of the listeners are following this better than I am. You're looking at taking 25% of the general partner's promote. So let's say it's a 70-30 deal. You guys are getting 25% of the 30%, putting you at 7.5% of the total promote of the deal?
Correct.
Gotcha. So the opportunity that avails you, and to add some numbers back in that I took out of the bio, you said that your firm is interested in bringing up to 95% of the GP equity, with the assumption being that GP equity in a deal like this needs to be 10%, because you'll have to get to 10% in order to be a single signer on the loan. So call it 9.5%. At 25% of the 30%, so 7.5% of the promote, bringing 9.5% of the capital, you're in a position to see around 2.5 to 3 times the IRR that you would as a limited partner in the same deal.
It's not quite that high. Usually if we're using your same equity split, so 9.5% of the total equity, taking 25% of the promote, and the deal level IRR is 20%, depending on the terms, it'll be in the low to mid 20% IRR for CTC, just as like a generalization.
Yeah, on an IRR basis, as the co-GP, because of our equity percentage, let's call it 9.5% of the total equity, and that operator bringing in roughly 0.5% of the total equity, the operator's IRR will always exceed ours. So that's really just a function of splitting the majority of the promote dollars going to that operator over a minimal amount of investment relative to the total deal size.
Chances are the operator measures their investment not just in capital, but also in time and expertise. Speaking on behalf of my fellow operators, but I totally get what you're saying there. Last question as we transition into the last segment of this podcast here. Preston, thank you for the clarification on what the returns look like for you all by comparison to global and typical LP returns. So they are greater. Is there any greater risk being taken by your fund since it's a part of the general partnership?
We do sign a 9-recourse debt, so there is a risk component there. And then depending on how many deals we've done with the operator, we will oftentimes, for not the first deal, but later deals, share in pursuit cost. That includes depositing earnest money, refundable and non-refundable earnest money. So there is some additional risk at the front end of the deal. As we go through the deal, obviously, signing on the debt, we're subject to all the lender requirements there. But most of the pursuit cost risk is where the additional risks are burdened by our fund.
The possibility that you lose money on deals that don't close.
Correct.
Gotcha. Going back to big picture here to wrap up this conversation. This is a gross overgeneralization of the conversation that we've had thus far, Mark and Preston, but you have found a way to structure deals to create outsized returns for your fund by comparison to what the majority of capital contributing partners are getting in value add multifamily syndications. Kudos to you. When it comes to other investors who are looking to contribute capital to similar value add multifamily deals, chances are they're currently primarily LPs and their investing is IRR driven. What advice do you have for IRR driven capital providing investors when it comes to increasing their potential returns while experiencing the same market conditions that we're all still experiencing?
I would say look at as many deals as you can. There's lots of opportunities out there, and the only way you can realize the best one is to look at as many out there as you can and do your own risk analysis to see if the returns are worth it. From a modeling aspect, we can take any deal in a spreadsheet and make it look great or make it look terrible simply by moving something as basic as the exit cap. So by fully understanding the value add proposition for a specific property, the operator's experience, knowing the submarket, and then knowing the deal terms, that can definitely enhance value for that investor who's looking at a deal and trying to compare opportunity A to opportunity B.
I would say another thing too is make sure you really are looking for IRR and not something like cash on cash or just some sort of fixed cash flow. We look at IRR because our investors are more of the high net worth individual who do not need monthly, yearly cash flow. A lot of the deals we look at, we don't even get cash flow until it's sold, until that promote kicks in. So if you're looking at an IRR, there's not going to be a cash flow in a lot of the better IRR deals just because of how they're structured on the back end. And if you're going to put a substantial amount in and going to need something as a more income-like approach, IRR is probably not the best metric to look at as well.
Gotcha. Unfortunately, running short on time, we're not going to have time for a full lightning round here. That was some best ever advice, though. Last question from me on this subject. Arriving to the deals, the portfolio, the deal structures that you're focused on now, what is the biggest mistake that you all have made and the best ever lesson our listeners can learn from it?
I would say one of the bigger mistakes is underestimating the amount of CapEx on older property. You get a PCA report done on a property, but you got to realize you're going to be married to that property for multiple years. So that PCA report is good for today. It's not telling you what's going to happen in 3, 5, 7, 10 years. So I would say that the one takeaway is to make sure there's significant dollars available in terms of contingency. And then if the property is a cash flowing property upon stabilization, which it should be, you don't distribute all those dollars out to investors for the sake of increasing the cash on cash return. Because as much as an investor likes receiving distributions, they really don't like capital calls. So building in a large enough contingency for any type of potential unknown CapEx needs is mandatory for us.
That makes a lot of sense. Real last question this time. Where can people get in touch with you?
Check out our website at ctccapitalmanagement.com. You can also email us at capitalmanagement@chicagotrading.com, or the phone also works, 312-863-8079. That'll ring straight to us, and we look forward to hearing from you.
Great. Those links are in the show notes. Mark, Preston, thank you. Best ever listeners, thank you as well for tuning in. If you've gained value from this episode, please do subscribe to our show, leave us a 5-star review, and share this episode with a friend you know we can add value to through our conversation today. Thank you, and have a best ever day.
Awesome. Thanks for having us.
Thanks, Locum.
Hi, best ever listeners. Joe Fairless here again. And one last thing before you go, would you like to receive a short weekly email with proven tips from experienced investors, free tools and resources, and a roundup of the week's most relevant news and best ever content? Well, if so, join the community of nearly 15,000 commercial real estate passive and active investors who receive the best ever newsletter. Just go to bestevercre.com/access. And you'll get the very next one. I hope you enjoyed this episode. And as always, thank you for listening and have a best ever day.